incident happens, see, you wouldn't be able to have an emergency situation. For every person on board the space station, in this case they have 7 people right now, there has to be seats on, you know, on one or more of these spacecraft that's attached, you know, to leave if there was an emergency. So to do this one location, relocation of the Soyuz spacecraft, 3 people are going to get in there. The spaces, the whole bit, and eventually disconnect and then relocate themselves to another port and then come back down through that port. And eventually, on the American side, they're going to do that as well, not too long from now. Because they want to send another crew, Dragon, up with another 4 people. By the way, those 4 people, there's 3 out of 4 that are going to be, that are also ham radio operators. So, but those 4 will be sent up soon. I think I'm seeing April. I think April 22nd is the date for that. So they're going to fly up to the space station and then and dock. They want to dock. They would like this one port to dock when they first go up. But that right now is occupied by the other spacecraft with the other 4 people on them that are still up there. So they're all eventually going to get into that spacecraft and relocate to another port, connect to another pressure mating adapter. And that will leave that port open for the new crew to come up. So that should be, you know, I'll find that interesting anyway, watching this, these relocations of the spacecraft. Any questions or comments? WS2N. Okay, it's going to be another one of these Starlink flights to put more of these, you know, another 60 satellites into orbit for Elon Musk's Starlink system. He's really getting carried away. He's already got over 1,200 of these satellites flying out of space on a 51-degree inclination, which covers a tremendous part of the Earth. Eventually, he wants to put some more into he's got some, but he wants to put more into a polar orbit as well to try to eventually cover the whole Earth with a broadband computer and television link-up. For, you know, anybody on Earth, you know, you pay $99, plus $499 for an antenna, and you'll be in business, and $50 shipping fee. But, you know, he expects to get millions of these people to sign up across the globe. There's 3 billion people that have no internet service whatsoever, and he's looking to tap into that group. We'll see if from what I understand, he's testing now. He's going to launch another group of satellites in a couple of days, and then I think another 4 or 5 days after that, another 60 satellites up there. He's just going to keep on going, from what I say, unless somebody stops. So that's the latest on Elon Musk. And, you know, each satellite is... weighs 500 pounds. I mean, it's like each one is like a small piano. But they're not small satellites. Launches 60 at a time, over 30,000 pounds of payload in one shot. You know, they all have their own GPS and they have laser links for communications between one another. They have ion engines to put themselves into a proper orbit, proper height. The ion engines are krypton fuel, which, you know, most ion engines run on xenon fuel, which is a heavier fuel, but also that's a more expensive fuel. So he's got thousands of these satellites that will eventually be up there, so it's a lot cheaper to run on Xeon with krypton fuel instead of regular Xeon fuel. Any questions or comments? I'm coming to an end. That's the time. This is WS2N. Nothing hard. We got a few other things I can talk about anytime. There's going to be a China launch in a couple of weeks. They're putting up their own space station. So we'll be putting up a first section of what will eventually be, I guess, five different modules. We'll talk about that next week. And of course, everybody knows about the Mars rover riding around on Mars. I follow that every year. Every week, and usually on the net, but the only thing I can say about that is they did get a chance to roll, and they roll, they put the motors on, and they were able to go, I think 30 feet, 33 feet in one direction, and they made a complete left-hand turn, and they threw it into reverse. That lets them know all the wheels are able to turn, and they're able to go forward, backwards, and they're getting ready to roll. Any comments, questions, and then Tom will turn it back to Roy. Nothing hard. Turn it back to Roy. Tomorrow is Monday, and usually the club information net. So anybody that wants to check into that, you can. You don't have to be a member to do that. And that's at 8:30 on these same repeaters. And then we have the Slop and Shop in Georgia. He'll be on that. And that's always followed by Newsline later in the evening. Any other comments? If not, I'm turning it back to Roy. Thanks, Paul. Well, very good. Roy, AC2, GSWS2X.
Yes, indeed. This is AC2GS, and thank you as well, Paul, for the SpaceNet report. Thanks to Andy, WA2CDL, for Andy's Corner. Thanks to everyone who participated tonight. Like I always say, it's you guys that make or break a technical net, both with questions and participating with answers and thoughts and ideas. So I want to thank everyone, and as always, I want to remind everyone, if you want to contact us and you can't go through the actual TechNet radio connection, if you have any topics, any questions, any puzzlers, what have you, the email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. The link page, check it out, is full of interesting articles that I didn't have a chance to get to. You can get to it by typing in roy.ac2gs.com, and I offer a audio stream of the LIMARC repeater at technet.ac2gs.com. Up until recently, k2lie.net had a broken stream. They've repaired it, but it's very, very noisy, so you can listen to that one, or you can listen to technet.ac2gs.com, as you wish. I want to remind everyone of Mike, AC2NJI's amateurradio.tv website, where he has archived these technical nets going as far back as September of 2006. Let me drop for a sec. Okay, as I'm given to repeat great lines from Dick K2RIW, one of the wisest men that I've met. He would often end the technical net with something along the lines of be kind to each other, and I agree wholeheartedly. It's good advice in general, but in these days, it's particularly good advice. The virus is still with us. Variants are popping up. Please, when you have a chance to take a vaccine, do take the vaccine. Please socially distance. Please mask. Please obey the simple rules that will limit the amount of people being infected, and we'll all get out of this alive. Remember, turn your clocks ahead 1 hour next Saturday night. I don't want you to be off time. And I wish you a safe week, and I hope that you'll all come back and join me here next Sunday. I'll have a couple more puzzles available for that. So until next time, be well, be safe. This is Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra saying good night to everyone, and I will be clear.
WS2N from WB2BX. So the Echo link is still there.
WB2BXL. WS2N, and I probably did not leave enough room for Echo Link, did I?
Yeah, not your fault. It just takes a long time for everything to drop so Echo Link can get in. And if it were important enough, I'd go in through the Echo Link chat or the AC2GS chat and get your attention. In any case, when I saw that explosion, I wondered if maybe some poor engineer was busy high-fiving his buddies when the ship landed and neglected to tap or click a message on his screen that said, "Are you sure you want to shut off the fuel valve? Yes, no." Just imagine that happening, and if it did, I think that engineer is sort of in the doghouse with the boss for a while.
Yeah, I was wondering, what in the world, I was surprised the thing was okay, because as it was coming down, I could see that flame on one side of it. I don't know if you saw a replay. You got a better picture if you saw the SpaceX webcast, and you could really see the flame on the side. But even they didn't pay attention to it. He got, got his name. He does a lot of the Falcon 9 launches, but now he's doing Starship launches as well. He's an announcer for SpaceX, I'm thinking. Last name begins with an I. But anyway, he says that's it. I mean, it's successful. We successfully launched. We went up to 60,000 feet, shut our engines off one at a time, and we belly flopped it all the way down to the ground, and three engines, three lit, and he had this whole thing, and then the other two engines shut down. We landed on one engine, and we succeeded, and that's it. That's it for our broadcast, and they went off. It went off. I mean, it was 8 minutes, roughly 8 minutes between from when they soft landed to when that thing blew up. So I think if anybody's going to be surprised, it's going to be that announcer, when he shut everything off. What were you watching it on? Did you see it on the, I call it YouTube channel, the Las Padre link back then?
Yeah, I missed it live. I actually saw it the next day and watched it and said, I wonder if somebody forgot to click shut off the fuel flow. Yeah, unfortunately, I was watching, I had the launch on live while I was working. And when they had the T-Zero report, I said, well, it's probably it for the day. I shut it off. And then found out the next morning that, oh, yeah, they did try to launch. It blew up past the landing. I think I had been watching it on the Space Google Vision link or whatever they call it. There were a bunch of them, but I saw a couple of the replays. I saw Scott Manley's. I saw Marcus Everyday Astronaut, and who's the other guy? I think they all ran it from a whole bunch of different angles, slow motion and all the rest of it. Pretty cool.
Okay, I'm going to have to look for the Scott Manley one. He's terrific. That guy, I think he really He really knows how to explain things. I'll have to watch it. But, yeah, they have this hydrologist system of pressurizing the tanks and everything. So I guess that all worked out this time. It failed the first time. You know, created too much of a vacuum inside it. Tanks actually floated, you know. But now, this time, it apparently all works. But what they do is they take the pressure from the fuel and put the oxygen in it forced, you know, it becomes hot. And they have an external line that runs on the outside of the whole rocket all the way up to back into the tanks. And, you know, that pressurized, you know, in this case, methane, because that's pressurized. That's what keeps the tank from collapsing when all the fuel, you know, is being pumped out of the system. You know, you create a vacuum, and it'll be like putting steam in a can and then, you know, closing it off to watch the can collapse, that type of thing. So that's a pretty good system they got. Apparently they got that work, but something else happened. Like you said, somebody left the valve open, or they didn't hit the motorized valve to shut something down, or it broke. You know, things break when they're in this development like this. Back to you, Frank.
Yeah, I suspect the fuel shutoff was supposed to be automatic, but if it wasn't, then somebody forgot to click the shut off the fuel dialog box, then they're going to be in the doghouse with the boss for a while. But, that was something. Anyway, I think it went up to 30,000 feet this time. I guess the next flight, my guess is the next flight will be supersonic, to make sure they can make it through Max-Q with the thing, and then probably SN-15. I think SN-15 is the first one they're putting heat shields on, so that'll probably be the first one to go suborbital. It'll really try to get it up past the Kármán line and bring it down, but, you know, that's just my guess from watching all these videos.
Yeah, they've been attaching. I don't know if this one had. I don't think this one had, but I think on 11 they have some heat shield pieces attached. They're going to use those, you know, to see how it's affected. I think 11 probably will go higher, like you said. Originally, they wanted to go to 12 kilometers, and they backed off to, like you said, they're probably 60,000 feet. You know, that's as high as an airplane, so that's pretty high. But you see how slow it goes up? You know, it doesn't, you know, take off like a... like the other rockets, like Falcon 9 does, or the Apollo rockets. You know, it really looks like a slow climb. Now eventually that's going to have six engines on it, that Starship section. So I don't think it would be able to make it to orbit, although I don't know that. It's going to have six engines. It'll have three of these engines, and then, you know, three Raptors, and then the other three will also be Raptor, but they'll be equipped to operate in vacuum. So this way, when they get to the vacuum, those things will be operating. But the actual booster, well, you probably, yeah, you've seen it too, 28 of these engines will be on the booster. that I gotta see. I mean, that I gotta see. He wants to build a city down there. I think they're going to chase him out of Texas when he lights that thing off. Back to you, Frank. WS2S.
Yeah, I don't think the FAA or anybody else has any intention of allowing them to launch new orbital launches from Boca Chica. That's why they're building the building the ocean platforms to launch it from out in the Gulf. And I think they're also negotiating with Indonesia to launch from one of the remote islands there where they're not going to bother anybody. They're looking into a bunch of things in the event they can't talk the federal government into letting them launch from Boca Chica. And it's even doubtful they'll allow them to launch that thing from the Cape, I think. Anyway, that's going to be interesting. It's not an SSTO. It's not a single stage to orbit, as I understand it. The only people working on an SSTO are the British, oddly enough, I think. It does need a booster to make orbit, but I think they can do suborbital with just the Starship. It's not really intended to be, as I said, an SSTO. It's meant to be a second stage. Anyway, the whole thing's kind of wild. I think of these people as the space cowboys. I guess it's appropriate for Texas. Kind of incredible thing. Go ahead.
It's a lot of fun to watch. You go from week to week or month to month, and the advancements that this guy is doing with SpaceX. I mean, he's really got his act together, I know he's got a lot of money and all, but he really does come out with this innovative stuff. I think you're thinking of, Skyline? I'm trying to think of the name of that one spacecraft. Skyliner? No, that's not it. I'll think of it. But I know reaction engines, making the engines for the thing. To eventually have that deal where they can take off from a runway and go to space, actually orbit and come back. You probably know it. It changed its design over the last 5-10 years. I haven't heard about that thing in probably about 3 years. I don't know what's happening with that, but if they can develop that engine is going to be able to work taking off, like a rocket or like a jet plane, and then the engine itself will be able to switch over to liquid oxygen and regular fuel like a rocket. Same engine. That's probably the one you're thinking about.
K2SPP.
Hi, Chris. I'm standing by for Frankfurt.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You're probably right, but it is an interesting idea anyway. I forget which one of the YouTubers said that they thought the single stage to orbit concept was a non-starter. You just have to carry too much fuel in one vehicle to do it. There's a big difference between being able to get up into space and being able to get enough velocity to make orbit. Anyway, but the interesting thing you mentioned is I've heard some comments on that, and the reason that they're going very slowly, they're throttling back the engines and going up very slowly, comparatively speaking, to 30,000 feet, is that they don't want to go supersonic with the vehicle just yet. And I don't know. I don't know whether they're not going supersonic because they don't have clearance to be supersonic in a populated area, or they just don't think the vehicle's ready for it yet. Because of the stresses on the structure.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I'm not sure how they're going to get up to that speed. You know. I mean, they got three engines. They could add three more, you know, unless they have these things that throttle back all the way up. I haven't heard that yet. Chris, over to you. How you doing? WA.
Good. How you doing, Paul? Thanks. K2SDP. I got to tell you, I watched that launch live that you were talking about, and when it finished, I thought it landed and everything was good. I had no idea it blew up until you mentioned it. So I just went back and watched it on YouTube, blowing up afterwards, and I had no idea. It's so funny that you mentioned that they finished it as if it was all good. I had no idea it blew up. But interesting, if you watch the YouTube explosion it has on here, it says landing. At the very end of it, at 2:48, 2 minutes and 48 seconds, when the capsule comes down and hits the ground after blowing up, there are like 6 or 7 high-pressure cylinders that come flying off of it with pressure coming out of them, and they go completely across the screen in slow motion out of the picture. I'd love to know what the heck all those things are. Over to you.
I haven't seen that yet. I have not seen that. I don't know. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, he's got a lot of work to do. I mean, he's getting there, but he's got a lot of work to do. He can make this a viable system. Wow. But yeah, he's getting there. I mean, you know, I think the next flight, Frank thinks it's going to go supersonic. I just don't know if he's going to do that. I think he still wants to land it and check everything out on the engines and then maybe refly it just to prove that he can do it. I think that might be the next move. We'll see. Yeah. See, that's what happens. That's what happened to the announcer. Okay, that's it. Wrap. That's a wrap. You know, they shut it down, and that's it. I looked at their website. I don't believe it. That guy's going to be shocked. The announcer for SpaceX. He probably didn't sleep that night. Why did I shut it off? All right, guys. I'm going to say 73 for tonight. We'll catch you later or next week. Frank, over to you now. He's going to go over to Chris. Back to you, Frank.
Okay, that's me. Yeah, I've got a call in a night momentarily also. Good net as usual. Great net as usual. Enjoyed it. Currently, beginning to be so.
Good night, guys. Take it easy. K2SDP. Paul, take a look at that YouTube. It's pretty amazing towards the end when I go slow-mo. K2SDP, I'll be clear.
Oh, I will, Chris. Absolutely. Okay, very good. K2SDP, WS2N. Clear for this evening.
this is Chuck speaking.
KD2OGD. KD2OGD, repeat the call, please.
N2XJN.
N2XJN, KD2OGD, how you doing? Popping by for the last 15 minutes, seeing who's any, who else is out there.
Technics just finished in the time of Dick that was till midnight. Now it's a little bit shorter. So, probably there are a few people still listening, can't you actually?
Yep, I know. I'm not looking for Roy or anybody. I'm just taking a listen. Pretty much finished with work for the night, waiting to get out of here. Currently in Jamaica Station, downstairs.
Are you working night times, night shifts? What is it you do?
LIRR Station Cleaner and Chief. Currently, waiting to get on out of here. I'm done for the day with my shift. Tomorrow is my release day, and then Tuesday is another, so pretty much today is my Friday. How about you?
I'm a little bit more fortunate that I can choose the time of work if I have to work, and I can maneuver myself with actually I'm giving a job to others. Yeah, and to actually.
All right, very good. Perhaps tomorrow I'm going to work on editing videos. I am looking into perhaps maybe doing some testing with my car. I don't want my antenna in the back anymore. I might put it back on the roof. I don't want to just leave the port empty. I'll probably find another antenna to put on, but I'm thinking of moving my Diamond antenna. Oh, sorry, not Diamond, Comet. My FFC7, it's a 55-inch tall antenna, 2-meter 440, and I'll probably put it back on the roof. I still have a magnetic mount, but it's only good with a PL259, so I'm going to have to find another mount.
What program do you use for editing?
Mount to the trunk of my car, and yeah, I have the antenna wire feeding through, I guess, the little gaps of the trunk and coming up into my radio.
No, I was asking you, you said I'm going to be editing videos. What program do you use for editing videos?
Oh, what programs I use to edit video? I use Adobe Premiere. Before that, I had Sony Vegas, which I used up to 2013. And then before that, I had a program called VideoPad, which was the first editor. Pretty good for the price. I have an Adobe license, so it's like $20 a month or $200 a year. I am looking to get Photoshop, but if it was less money, I'd buy it. But it's like another $10 or $20 a month, so I just stick with Adobe Premiere. It's what I've been using for the past 2 years. I'm already up for renewal this past February. I just renewed last week, so I'm good for another year. I pay annually. It's pretty good for the price.
Do you mind if I take the opposite opinion?
Opinions, I don't really have too many. It is a complicated editing software to use for beginners, but once you get the feel of it, it's pretty basic. I mean, there's a lot of things I do with it. I overlay videos with it. I do other tricks with it, like video transitions into clips. There's a lot of things that I can do with it. But, yeah, I recommend it for a lot of skilled people that want to get involved in, like, professional photography or video. Whatever suits you.
No, I wanted to be to play devil's advocate and say that what you're doing is not necessarily the best way of doing it. I've been using all of that what you've been using. I had Vegas, all of the versions of it. Sucks. But I thought at that time that it's not. Then I used Premiere. Well, the problem with the Premiere is you have to pay monthly. And how about if all of that you're doing is for free? 100% free, zero money pay, monthly, £0 money pay initially, and you have twice of that which you have now. Would you like that? And to exchange.
Nah, I'm not really interested. I prefer using Adobe Premiere. I mean, they've really changed Sony Vegas. They've made it look a lot like Adobe Premiere. They've also really done a lot of enhancements with Final Cut, I believe. That's a program for the MacBook. But I'm sticking with Adobe for now, so that's just what I use. Anyway, I'm going to hop off for the time being. I'm going to enjoy the rest of my time before time for me to head on home, so I'll say 7-3s, and 2XJN, KD2OGB, clear here in Jamaica, 7-3s.
Yeah, one more question, if you don't mind. Have you ever tried DaVinci Resolve number 17? It's free. If you want to have a studio version, it's $299, and all of the updates are free. I've been using it for the past few years with all of the versions, and the color science is absolutely amazing. And what is your channel on YouTube and Twitch here?
I don't want to give that directly through here, but $100 more, not really my taste. I like what I'm spending right now, so I'll keep it as simple as that. But I do thank you anyway.
I do thank you very much. I found this conversation very much interesting. I would love to talk to you more about it. Thank you very much. Have a good night.
No problem, 7-3. N2XJN, KD2OGB in Jamaica, clear.
K2SCP.
And to HGN.
if I heard you right, you have a better editing software that you say is free. Is that correct?
That is very much correct.
Love to hear what it is. I've been looking for one myself.
Okay. So I've been using all possible softwares. And I know the history of those softwares and the industry. Part of that, I just ordered Blackmagic Packets Cinema Camera 4K Pro. This one is with ND filters, so now it really is worth of buying. It's not expensive, it's the cheapest possible camera, film camera on the market. And I have EVA-1, which is Panasonic. You can check on the internet, EVA-1. England Victor America 1. But that's part of the package, let me drop. So, what is important there is environment. I was using pieces of environment from different manufacturers, and all of it is just related to simply cutting, pasting, and putting together clips and making the video. And then in about 2016, I found a manufacturer that is ruining all of the business. So we had Arri Alexa, we had all of those big guys. We had Panasonic with C200 and 300. And then all of a sudden we've got Blackmagic, who put in the market cameras that were Ursa, the first Ursa. So now you can buy it for $700. But it's a great camera if you don't looking for 4K. But then I saw that Blackmagic is rapidly growing. They purchased Fairlight. They purchased, which was the module. They purchased the color module. And Hollywood start to use on daily basis a technology of Blackmagic. And now Blackmagic is actually ruining all of the business because everybody is suffering, including Adobe, that is really suffering. I remember at the time in 2007, they were trying to sell the piece of software for $7,000-$8,000, but they find out then that it is better to have something that is monthly basis. And they were doing, Premiere was doing a good money till DaVinci put on the market the two. At first, their color module, but then they made a fully functional software, so it's being called DaVinci Resolve 17. DaVinci Resolve 17 is no pay, it's free. But if you want to have all of the options, then you pay $299, if I remember correctly, one time. You're going to have a lifetime free update, and it's the best software on the market. There is no better software. The color science is absolutely amazing. They have right now version 5. It's incredible, absolutely incredible. So, and it's easy to learn. So we're talking about 70% of users of Premiere Pro. They left Adobe and they switched to Blackmagic. So Blackmagic is the company from Australia that is doing all of that stuff. But they have plenty of other things. And to Asia.
Gotcha, understood. Thank you for that information. I just found it online. I see it's DaVinci Resolve, I guess, is the source. I got to give that a shot. I don't do anything fancy editing, do simple stuff, but I was looking for for decent packets to use. This looks interesting. My father, who passed a couple of years ago, used to own a video production company, and he sold professional video production equipment to the entire East Coast. And by that, I mean cameras by Sony and Hitachi and Panasonic. They were $200,000-$300,000 cameras that would sell to the network companies like NBC and CBS. But I used to know a little bit about it. I worked there when I was in college, but of course that was a long time ago. Don't remember much of that, but the world has changed a lot. But I appreciate it. Thank you. I'm going to take a look at this software.
Yeah, well, I like to know a lot about technology in different directions. I have switched to Blackmagic completely. So I have a video assist, which is a small monitor. I had all of the, there's ATM, ATM Mini, ATM Mini Pro, and ATM Mini ISO. That's absolutely amazing when you have one more than one camera, and let's say you want to do on Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, and others, you want to have some very nice looking stuff posted, or you want to have a live transmission, or you want to do the lecture, and there is ATM, they have right now ATM Extreme, so I ordered ATM Extreme Pro ISO, no, ATM Extreme ISO, right, that's the newest one, and their new camera, interesting with the camera, they put 2.5 years ago on the market a first Blackmagic pocket cinema camera and for $1,200, and it was real cinema camera. And if you have it steady in your place, it works great. It has a little bit of disadvantage, short battery time. But then they put on the market Blackmagic pocket cinema camera 6K, which 6K is a good one. And I was still hesitating to buy, and now they put the same 6K with a Pro, version Pro, which has the ND filters built in. And I ordered it, so nobody has it. I mean, some people already got it. It's like a waiting time, sometimes it's a very long one, but it's like half of a world is waiting what Blackmagic is going to put on the market now. So this is right now an extremely well-reputed company. It was a startup in 2007 and grew up to wow. Not saying Elon Musk, but because this is not the same money, but those 200,000-300,000 cameras went down to 50,000 because of Blackmagic, and now the same RE Alexa was pushed to go with the cameras that cost $6,000-$7,000 just to match the market because they were losing the market. I remember the Panasonic cameras, professionals for film, were $29,000. They still are, but they had to put on the market something that is suitable for other people because they were also pushed out. And Canon, well, depends from the application, for regular bloggers, that was Mark V, no, that was, oh gosh, I forgot, that was C300 was about $11,000, they dropped the price to $9,000. Then they put on the market C200, which was supposed to be a cheaper version for 7.5, and then of a sudden, 2 years ago, Panasonic put on the market extremely good camera, which is EVA1. That's absolutely amazing one. I have one. But the thing is that Blackmagic is simply killing everybody on the market. So their newest camera that nobody has yet, the Blackmagic Pocket Cinema Camera 4K is $2,500. And this is the least expensive camera in the world. And color science, oh boy. Oh boy. It's simply amazing. Working with DaVinci Resolve 17 already a long time, it's easy to learn. You don't have to do fancy stuff or not fancy stuff. If you don't want 4K, you don't need to pay. But again, if you pay $299, I believe that's the price, you have it, you have a studio version. All of the whistles possible. Now the problem with Premiere was that when you are doing something on a Premiere, all of a sudden you have all of those updates and it's crashing everything, all your projects. But this one, you don't have that. Because Premiere wants to charge you for every module, everything that you need, you pay additionally. So sometimes people caught themselves that they pay in 1 month more money to Premiere than they could pay one time for DaVinci Resolve and not pay any longer. And to XG.
Personally, I mean, I come from an IT background, and I hate the current direction these companies are going. All the software, so all this pay-as-you-go monthly fee. I mean, Microsoft invented it with the first cloud stuff, charging monthly. It drives me nuts. I always like buying a license, owning the product, and I look at it like a book. I buy it, I put it on the shelf, and you know, I own it and keep it forever, and they update it for a small time, and then at some point you have to upgrade and give them some more money. But I hate them paying monthly. I never liked that. But interesting. I just downloaded it. I'll give it a shot. K2SCP, I got to take off. Thanks for the info, Leslie. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. If you need some help with that, you can catch me. I'm not all... Not always on the radio, but from time to time I switch down. So, where do you live?
I'm out on the east end of the island, on the South Shore, on Brookhaven. I see you're in the city that's in there, huh? Brooklyn.
And what do you use that software for?
No, I do, sometimes I do YouTube stuff, whatever, I do general stuff, nothing any specific, I do some technical stuff with software sometimes. I've always just used, like, Movie, something that comes free with Windows, and of course, you get very little features in it, so I was just looking for something with a little more kick to it, that's all. K2SCP.
And in terms of IT, what
the time is 12:04 a.m. 73 and good night from the W2VL repeater. The time is 12:04 a.m. 73 and good night from the W2VL repeater. That's tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.